Love this podcast? Support this show through the supporter feature from Acast. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Attention, collectors of vinyl. Have you ever gone into a record store and felt overwhelmed by all the unfamiliar options? Are you frustrated by the constantly increasing prices of classic rock staples? Do you avoid streaming music or long for the days when music was recommended to you by a friend instead of an algorithm? If the answer to any of these questions is yes, then check out I'd Buy That for a Dollar, a podcast about inexpensive, common, and underappreciated records that are waiting to be rediscovered. Each week, hosts Sean, Jeremy, and Peter discuss an album and the artist's history. Previous episodes include selections by The Isley Brothers, The Carpenters, The Doobie Brothers, and Donna Summer, among others. Become a bargain bin pro and impress all your friends with cool music trivia. Listen to I'd Buy That for a Dollar wherever you get your podcasts. Lee Reed is a remarkably talented hip-hop artist who lives in Hamilton, Ontario. Once an MC in the powerful collective Warsaw Pack, Reed has gone on to make politically charged and outspoken rap music on his own, including his brand new album Before and Aftermath, which is out now via the excellent American label Strange Famous. Lee and I have caught up a couple of times recently, once when he was a guest on my live Long Night talk show, which was captured on episode 451 of this podcast. He also dropped by CFRU 93.3 FM in Guelph, where he performed a few songs and chatted with me during a live radio broadcast and YouTube stream. And we talked about, what did we talk about? We talked about ecological collapse, indigenous resistance, conscious, and also mumble rap, the cons and possible pros of voting, Sage Francis. We talked about cities like Hamilton, Ontario. We talked about Before and Aftermath, his new album, and we talked about many other things. With the support of listeners like you, who subscribe to this podcast and spread the word about it and make flexible monthly pledges at patreon.com/creativecontrol, plus in-kind support from CFRU 93.3 FM, Pizza Trocadero, The Bookshelf, and Planet Bean Coffee in Guelph, and Granddad's Donuts in Hamilton, Ontario, where Lee Reed is from, this is the 456th episode of Creative Control, featuring the great Lee Reed with your host, me, Vish Khanna.
Symbiotic shit, the same old politic. Paul rolls slow by the pole, watching them. Plus they racist as fuck. Cops in the Klan holding hands and in love. POC constant, got COP on them. Caught them, stopped them, looking for some problems. They goons with impunity, kill, beaten, harass certain communities. Done in collusion with state absolution. Brute force, dude core, fuck those douches. Come on,
A-C-A-B.
Cops walk the beat like sharks at the reef, stalk meat for the teeth, say
fuck the police.
Come on, come on,
A-C-A-B.
Cops serve greed at the feet of elites, see the teeth of the beast, say
fuck the police.
We are gonna have equal rights and justice in our own country, or we will restructure their function.
Hi, Lee. How's it going?
Good, Vish. How are you doing?
I'm very well. It's nice to have you here in Guelph.
Thanks.
At CFRU. Is everything okay in there?
Brian and Jenny hooked it up good.
Everyone technically assisted you. You feel comfortable.
I do.
You are, for those who can't see us right now, you are surrounded by green fabric.
I am.
This is for the YouTube channel that we have at CFRU. So you won't know what's behind you as you're performing today. How does that make you feel?
Great. I know I'm in good hands. I know I'm in good hands.
All right. Well, that's great. And before we get too much further, Before and Aftermath, your latest album is wonderful.
Thank you.
It's amazing. I love it. I've been listening to it a lot. I can't wait to hear you play songs from it, because that's what we're going to do. You're going to play some songs. We're going to chat about it. Is that the plan?
Indeed. Sounds great.
Okay. Why don't you kick things off with a song? And if so, if you don't mind doing that, what song do you want to start with?
I'm going to start with The Six Massive, which is the first song on the new record.
Okay. Let's hear it. This is Lee Reed live on CFRU.
Yeah.
Welcome to the sixth mass extinction.
Yeah. Before collapse, before the rapture, before bits of bricks and broken glasses, before scores of storms flatten us, habitats dried up and cracked. After NAFTA, the disaster was supranational trade pacting, unfettered access to capital, before the crash that ended crashes, after the green light on greed, governments governing by agreement, designed, signed by the company chief, by and for corporate supersede, override the needs of life, before we die, cause they sign it. The sky cracked and society took two gigantic steps backwards. After the passage of Trade Act, enacted and activated, aftermath, after apathy, call path through green pasture, after fascists, after Keynesian market strategists, built the patterns that killed the planet, after knowing but as it manifests, big business gets a grab at it. After the aftermath, after aftermath, it got added in. Subtraction, resource extraction. After markets are made the master. Before collapse, before the rapture, before the bricks and the glass. After sovereignty's put to pasture, and the earth tapped of its vastness. Until the last of it, mapped and stacked on charts and graphs. You can add that to the tab. The before and aftermath. Yeah, you can add that to the tab. You can add. Can you add? Yeah, you can add.
New music live at CFRU. That was new music by Lee Reed. That was The Sixth Massive from his excellent new record, Before and Aftermath, which is out now via Strange Famous Records and came out in October. Lee, that was great.
Thank you.
How are you feeling in there?
Good, good. It's a little odd performing in a room surrounded by green fabric.
Yes, I can only imagine it might be odd. But again, for people who end up watching this or are watching it now on YouTube, maybe they can fill us in and let you know, you know, what it is you're floating in sort of digital space.
Ooh.
There. But no, that was great. So that kicks off the record. Is there a reason why The Sixth Massive kicks off Before and Aftermath?
Yeah, I guess in a sense it's not really a single, you know, kind of an introductory song. The sort of vocal cut that we dropped at the beginning there, Welcome to the Sixth Mass Extinction, it seemed to kind of situate the album correctly, or what we're really trying to do, this period in time and in history. I think that's pretty much the best sort of situating phrase that comes up in the record. Welcome to the Sixth Mass Extinction. In progress, so to speak.
That's right. Scientists believe there have been five mass extinctions, and scientists believe we've begun the sixth mass extinction.
Indeed.
Where do you know where we are? Just to keep this performance nice and cheery, do you know where in the sixth mass extinction we currently are situated? How far gone are we?
You know, I'm no scientist, but I've been reading that we've somehow managed to destroy more than half of the animal and plant species in the last 50 years. So I guess we're more than halfway through it. I don't really understand what constitutes mass part, whether it's the speed with which it happens or the total number or percentage of species that we've lost.
Yep.
But
Like the IPCC report that came out recently. Everything's pretty dire, you know, and none of it's new information. We've been hearing this for years. Mm-hmm. We've been hearing this since I was a kid, really. But I feel like the tone and the worry and the panic in the voice of scientists and in the voice of people that are talking about it is getting a little more fever pitch. So I would say we're more than halfway.
So how do you, I mean, I know how I feel about this. And like you say, we've been hearing this for decades,
mm-hmm.
some of us, like that things are dire. But it does seem like I don't know, it just seems more, like you say, there seems to be a bit more weight behind the pronouncements from the scientific community. How do you feel about this? Because I know you, one of the things I like about you on some level is that you recognize that certain things are futile, certain things we do. Mm-hmm. I know you have strong stances on whether or not people should vote, for example,
mm-hmm.
and how they should react to things. Do you feel in your heart, and you can be honest about this, do you feel like we can do anything to combat what scientists, like, I mean, to agree right. with scientists and do something about what's going on?
I get more pessimistic as time goes by.
And you have every right to be, I think.
Yeah, I think so. I think pessimism's probably realism at this point. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? That said, I do spend a lot of time and I do encourage other people to spend a lot of time getting more engaged with organizing.
Which that to me suggests that there's hope.
Indeed.
Within what you're talking about.
Totally. I mean, as much as pessimistic as my lyrics are or as my songs are, I am optimistic. I still see it. I still am inspired by good organizing, and I'm inspired by young people's engagement with these issues now.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
There's definitely things that give me hope and make me optimistic. That said, I mean, I see it as kind of two paths for me. I picture, you know, it's kind of like that phrase, what is it, you know, hope for the best but plan for the worst, you know.
Sure.
And I think we not only need to be organizing to kind of change how things work as we traditionally understand them, but you know, the greatest revolutions in history came about by making old ways obsolete. And I think what's exciting to me, in addition to folks organizing in environmental or social justice issues, is also people that are doing something else completely. More and more friends that I have living in kind of communities of mutual aid, using less money, sharing up on things, sharing up on kind of almost building their community up around not using money and not, mm-hmm. you know, taking part in society as we conceive of it right now.
Right.
So I see both of those kind of angles happening at the same time. And I think it's important that we do that. We need to start thinking about things like food and water security at a more local or community level.
This is likely why you tend to write lyrics in a rather blunt, you know, way. I think we've been receiving sugar-coated information for so long. And I think your viewpoint is like, things are dire. There's hope there. Like, there's something we can do. But you need to be traveling with both perspectives in parallel. Like, things are bad. The other side of it is we can do something about it if we actually engage with why things are bad.
We can, definitely. It's happening all around Canada. There's amazing organizing going on.
Yeah.
I think if you look especially to, like, Indigenous-led resistance in environmental, the fight for environmental justice, it's really inspiring. I mean, look at what's going on right now in Unistoten, out in Wet'suwet'en territory. They've been served with an injunction. These folks have sort of built a community in the path of pipelines on some unceded land out there. You got the tiny house warriors doing the same thing. And this kind of pushback is, to me, really inspiring. And I think represents one of sort of our best hopes. And I think Indigenous resistance in Central and South America and Africa, it's the same thing. Like, these are the folks that we need to look to. They've been through it. They know what's going on in the natural world. And I think people are waking up to that a little more.
Well, I feel like everything is out in the open. The resistance is in the open and is being covered on some level. And then the machinations or the actions of governing bodies are clear. Like people have access to that information and are responding to it more. I mean, from your time, and I feel like I first encountered you as an artist in Warsaw PAC.
Yeah.
Which this was an this group was formed where?
In Hamilton, in Ontario. Hamilton. Made up of seven cats from Hamilton, ranging in age, came together kind of through music. A lot of us met through.
And there was like a political undercurrent to that group, right?
There was.
Right.
Yep.
Okay. Yep. And again, it was, how would you describe it musically?
It was a bit strange. It was defied genre-ing a little bit. I guess you would say it was like a funk rock hop sort of, but take away all your
You were an MC.
I was. Yeah. That's right. Yeah. Yeah. It was seven pieces. We had horns and turntables. So it kind of got into that same terrain as like the Pocket Dwellers, if folks remember
kind of
like jazz hop or funk hop. But I think we were a little darker and heavier than that. I ended up on G7 Welcoming Committee, which was
Propagandhi's label,
which sort of repped a lot of like punk and heavier music.
Political stuff in particular. Yeah.
Yeah.
When did Warsaw PAC disband, so to speak?
We were around from 99 to 2004.
Right. So that's my first sort of encounter with you and your work. I'm curious about your makeup as an artist. Do you have any sense of why you got into, let's start with politics, actually. Hmm. Why you gravitated towards making music that is outspoken, that actually has substance to it? I know everyone makes music and they hope it has substance to it, but I view your music and your work as particularly substantive. Mm. It's topical, and that's an interesting artistic choice, because on some level, some people don't want to hear that. They don't go to music for that stuff.
No.
But you have been very steadfast in your aesthetic. Like, this is something you speak out. Mm-hmm. And I just wonder, do you know where that comes from within you?
Definitely. It comes from you know, the music that you take in when you're a teenager kind of affects you more than any, I think. I mean, I'm sure most people experience it that way too, that period from, you know, age like 15 to your early 20s. Mm-hmm. It kind of like sticks with you.
It's formative.
Yeah, yeah. And so I was those ages as kind of hip hop was growing, you know. So I'm 45 now.
Mm-hmm. Happy birthday.
Thank you. Thank you.
You're welcome.
You know, and so the hip hop that was around at the time that I was receiving it for the first time, even if it wasn't overtly political, it had a kind of substance to it or a social message in some ways. And the stuff that was overtly like that, for whatever reason, I just loved it. The first Public Enemy album, Yo Bum Rush the Show, maybe they have some demos predating that, but that was the first thing I got my hands on. I grew up in a small town up north, and you know, there was just a small group of us that even knew hip hop existed. You know, this was in the early 80s.
Yeah.
And so anytime any of us would go down to the city, we would take each other's money and we'd go to the record store and buy stuff. And a buddy of mine went down to Florida once and he came back with this Yo Bum Rush the Show. And I put that on, and seriously, that record like changed my life. Like I was just like, what is this? And I just loved it, you know? And I've loved P.E. since. And the message that came with early hip-hop, it kind of like, for me, got me looking into issues and got me looking into history and got me looking into politics. So the two for me are kind of intertwined a bit, you know? Like my interest in politics kind of walked this at the pace that music was revealing it to me, you know? You know, we didn't have the internet back then. I couldn't just hop on a computer and figure out everything that Chuck was saying. It took a while to distill and to learn about. And, you know, Rage Against the Machine, the early 90s, really affected me. I don't know. I was always moved by music that had a message like that, like the Dead Kennedys, you know, Minor Threat, some punk. It just, I don't know, it spoke to me, it moved me, and it kind of, I admired and looked for that in other artists.
Yeah.
And I, you know, I didn't really start writing and performing hip hop until much later in my life, but I was always listening to it and always kind of informed how I looked at things.
Yeah.
And when I got into writing it and performing it, it was just kind of natural that I'd want to say those things, you know?
Well, you said something quite fascinating to me just towards the beginning of what you were just expressing, which is that I think you were alluding to the fact that some of the hip hop that you encountered maybe wasn't as overtly political as Public Enemy, but by its very existence had a kind of political nature to it, a socio-political nature to it. Like maybe Tribe Called Quest or something didn't say the same kinds of things that Chuck D might say in a song, but they were expressing issues in their community, and it was in a feel-good aesthetic on some level, but you did get the sense that they had transcended something to get to that point where they could feel, you know, their communities were in peril of some kind, and they were, a lot of hip hop seemed to be coming from that period. So, and I agree with you, when I first encountered it, it all felt significant. Mm-hmm. It all felt important.
Mm-hmm.
But now I feel like hip hop has been saddled with that expectation.
Right.
And so I've talked about this numerous times where, like, I say to people, sometimes I don't relate as much to contemporary hip hop because I don't hear that kind of substance to it. And when I step back and hear myself saying that, A, I feel like I sound old, and B, I feel like it's unfair. I don't saddle other genres of music with that same kind of handle. Like, why isn't this saying something? Why are you only talking about materialism? When I think about all the rock music I've consumed, most of it is just whatever, frivolous kind of stuff. Do you feel that? Like, do you feel like hip-hop?
Definitely.
Yeah?
Yeah, I know exactly what you're saying, and I feel the same way. I never get into those conversations with people.
Hmm.
You know, if I'm online, a lot of my contemporary, like, older heads that are still doing it, especially, or are still connected with the community, there's a real vein of, like, anti-mumble rap, whatever you want to call it, that runs through the discourse. And I never really engage with that. If I'm forced to, I like to remind people that they could just go out and dig a little deeper because there is some amazing new hip hop being made. But I understand what you're saying, and the sort of hip hop that's foisted on people now, or the stuff that young people gravitate towards, it doesn't have substance in the same way that we came to understand hip hop. But at the same time, should it have to forever? Like, does hip hop have to, like, you know, do it that way all the time?
And I mean, not to provoke this argument any further, but when I think of Wu-Tang Clan, who mean the world to me, on some level, like, yes, they were expressing aspects of their community and the reality there, but a lot of their songs weren't overtly political either.
Right.
However, you mentioned mumble rap there. Technically, some of the greatest rappers of all time live in the Wu-Tang Clan. Like, I think just technically they are amazing, and they put a lot of effort into their ability.
Right.
And that, I think, is another, again, I don't want to go, you don't like to have these conversations. We're opening up a can of worms here that I don't even fully, I'm not committed to this argument.
Right.
But when you hear people of our vintage saying, like, I don't know, it doesn't feel like they're putting the byline is, we're crotchety old men saying, I don't know if these kids are putting as much effort into it the way we used to, or the people we liked used
That's
to.
Right.
And you get into this, like, I do, like, fundamentally, it's just me maybe being out of touch. But I do dig, like you say, I dig deep, and I still listen to contemporary hip hop. But I do worry that the stuff that resonates the most with me that's contemporary sounds like the stuff I liked.
Right.
And that's whatever. That's just maybe human nature. I don't know where I'm going with this argument, but I think, do you agree? Maybe it's just us.
I do completely. Yeah. No, and it's not just us. I think a lot of especially people that are, you know, as you say, of the vintage that grew up when hip hop was in its infancy. Those were exciting years, and it was revolutionary just for existing.
Yes,
you know
exactly.
What I mean?
That's what I'm saying. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's hard to keep that up to match that spirit, you know?
Well, it was easy to get behind KRS-One when he was talking about his neighborhood or what was going on or telling cool stories. But when someone else is just, like, rapping about sex or cars or mansions, like, it's like they became the establishment. When it was on the come up, like, when people were trying to aspire to get to out of their communities, it just felt, you know, like I'm totally for this.
Right.
There's no way I don't agree. I don't even know your politics, but the fact that you're trying to get out of a situation and better yourself and better your community, that's enough for me. But anyway, this is getting too off track and away from, I don't know, you don't really address stuff like this in your music, right?
I don't. And like I say, I spend, you know, the energy that like I look hard for, and I try to support, like, young cats that I think are, even if their style to me is a little not skillful or whatever, I'm always looking for that substance in younger performers and trying to put it on where I can. And it's out there, you know, those the kids are doing it. It's just it's in a different way.
Yeah, you know? I agree. Well, speaking of things in a different way, I believe that you're an artist who does things in a different way. And I think we've been talking enough about stuff that I didn't think we would talk about, that we should maybe, but it was a totally interesting, I hope, for you.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. Let's hear another song.
Yeah,
for
sure.
Do you want to perform something else?
Yeah, let's do it here. 1 second.
What do you want to play?
I'm DJ Double Click on my own.
Yes,
DJing
right.
Here tonight. Let's
right.
do Get Mad. This is probably the first single from the new record.
Okay.
I have a video out for this. You can find on the YouTubes. This song is called Get Mad.
All right, let's hear it. Lee Reed, live on CFRU, new music. This is Get Mad.
Yeah.
You've got to get mad.
I've been on the lift of fist, spit the resistance since like 96. I sense time in a bit, grip the mic, spit the rhyme that split the mind into big size and designed lines to politicize my gift into paradigm shifting. Gone distances, long distances, armed with mic like bombs and bricks. And I rap this for the blacklisted, black banner lifter, anarchistas. My jams have been banned from Christmas, man. Too damn anti-capitalista. Smash system, crash the market, smack the out of fascist talk with bars that crack the whack facade. The mob at the wall getting larger, larger, large, large.
I want you to get mad. You've got to get mad.
I talk this with my fist in the ball of it. At all of it, cops, bosses, and economists, and the columnists, electoral politic, charity, violent doctor, lawyer, court order, news reporter. I march my to Mordor, record and perform to kick down doors with it. Rant the anti-authority, block corridor, road, rail, port, with words to the wage of war with it. Throwing shade at all they prominence. And they dominance, yeah. And all of it.
I want you to get mad. You've got to get mad.
I'm calling it law bricks in it. Slingshot ballistic rock my talk. Toxic to the profit causing losses that put the company to coffin. Boom bap it off them. Boot stomp all the bosses. Stock options. I'm blue collar. Black bella clobber. Defend the water. Son, daughter, stand for the land and the cause. And sabotage. They bougie snarl. Coup d'etat, smash their heads in. I'm the cure for affluenza. Wrath and vengeance and rap descent at them 1% and they next of kin. Stabbing pen hit, booming kick, looming fan. I'm the hit man. Man.
I want you to get mad. Not you've got to get mad.
I want you. Get up now. Get up now. Get up. Get up. Get up. Get up. Get up. Get up now. Get up now. Get up. Get up. Get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now.
You've got to get mad.
Another great song by Lee Reed. That was Get Mad, which is the second song on
That's right.
Before and Aftermath. We're going in order today.
Just about. We're going in order of the non-sweary ones.
That was wonderful as well. I, you know what I neglected to ask you about the sixth massive was the beat. What do you want to say about the beats for these two songs that we've heard, Get Mad and the Sixth Massive? Where do they come from?
The whole record actually was produced by a dude from Hamilton named Supa83. And he produced probably about half of my last record as well. He's pretty diverse as a beat maker, but he saves me those sample-y, dusty, boom-bappy ones that I love so much. He's one of those guys that figured out what I really like and then will just like send it to me once in a while and be like, what do you think of this? So this record there's 12 beats and they're all by Supa83.
Well, they're great. They're wonderful.
Thank you. Yeah, he's amazing. He's killer.
They maybe speak to my earlier contention of like, I don't know, like the golden age of hip hop that resonates with me. Like
totally.
That's there for sure. Now, Get Mad. What inspired this particular song? What is your relationship with anger and rage in terms of resisting?
Mm. Yeah, I mean, I personally feel like people should be more angry. I feel like anger, I think it was Zach de la Roque that said anger is a gift. I really believe that. I think anger is the emotion that can drive things to get better. It's the emotion that makes you want to change things about your life or about You know, not always for the better. Anger can cause people to do really stupid things. But I also think that anger, when harnessed, is the emotion that will drive us to a better place. You know, first step, people need to get upset about their situation before they can change it, I think.
Are you ostensibly suggesting that anger needs to replace complacency? I feel like that's what you're talking about.
Definitely, yeah. And that comes up a bit on the record here. There's an album, there's a track on here called Docility Project, like the project of making people docile. And yeah, I honestly, I think anger is the counter to complacency, to docility. And we have way too much complacency in this culture, I think. People let too much slide. They let too much... you know, we're comfortable, you know, like probably the most, like the Western world at least, is probably the most comfortable it's ever been, even though everything's falling apart around us, you know. For the most part, we're all warm, we're all fed, and
That's fascinating to hear you use the word comfort, because I feel like we've been lured into complacency by the threat of anxiety and fear. I feel like, we're comfortable and fed and all those things, but we need to work really hard to get those things these days, and the way the media presents life to us, they never lead with like everything's great. It's like the top story. Like I can't listen because my kids are small. We stop listening to the radio.
Right.
The news radio, because how am I going to explain this to them?
Right.
The lead stories are like death, disease, right. Terror. It's not good. So I actually feel like, you say comfortable, I feel like it's a semblance of comfort. That's my take on it. I actually feel like we're bombarded with negativity.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. And yeah, I guess the comfort that I'm referring to would be the retreat from that. Yeah, definitely.
I turned off my radio because I didn't want to engage with that stuff. That leads to the complacency. That leads to not knowing what's going on. But I feel like, and I feel like America has a president that's just doing that right now, bombarding you with information that's terrible.
Yeah.
And then it forces the most engaged of us, the most sensitive of us, to have to just step back because we can't take it anymore.
Yeah.
I think it's a strategy.
I'd never really thought about it that way, Vish, but I think you're right. No, I think you're definitely onto something there.
Cheeriest conversation I've ever had on the show.
Doomed.
We're all a bit doomed. No, I just, like when you say people need to not be complacent, that's an aspect of it that I think about all the time.
Yeah.
Like how we engage and how we're taught to engage with information and how that can have this adverse effect, the reverse effect rather, like you could be so engaged that you can't take it anymore.
Yeah.
I actually think that's part of the deal.
Oh, that's totally it. And I see that working with a lot of organizers and activists. Burnout's very real, and
yes,
it's impossible to do all the things that you might want to do.
Yes.
Around a campaign or around a period of time. And it's, it's very real. And when you get too caught up in it, it can burn you out. That's for sure.
Well, one of the striking turns of phrase in that song, Get Mad, is, and I've been enjoying listening to this album on my walks to work and whenever I can in my headphones, you're right in there. You're right in my head. And so I've been struck by this line a few times. I'm the cure for affluenza. Which I thought was very clever and funny. What were you? I mean, I know what you were kind of getting at there, but can you expand upon that? We are very fixated on who has wealth and who doesn't,
and we
do tend to think that that's the root of so many of our problems. And I can't argue that, but I also don't know. I don't exactly know what can be done about this disparity. Do you have? I'm not asking you for a solution here, Lee.
No. Yeah,
when
no.
When you talk about affluence and how you as a representative of some kind of revolution or resistance, like what's going on? What's going on in that line for you?
Well, what's going on? I guess I'm trying to be vaguely threatening, you know? I'm trying to be like politically gangsta maybe or something. I'm trying to sound like I'm a danger to affluence and to wealth. I'm the
you
cure
and
for,
what you represent.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
Right.
I mean... Is equity in society and economics, is that going to solve everything? Not necessarily, but I mean the disparity right now, the you know, it's feudal age stuff. You know what I mean?
Like it's getting worse.
There's people with so much while so many people have nothing.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why United Healthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
You know, literally, what is it now? I think it's like 6 or 7 people have the same wealth as half the planet. Like, there should be no, that should not be possible.
But
that
I feel like for the last 15 years or so, I feel like that point was hammered home, certainly in American media circles, by people like Bernie Sanders and whoever else, is Michael Moore, whatever. They've been saying this forever, but yet elections come around and people vote for the opposite of their own interests, which, again, I mean, this is another reason why I think you have said, and I don't mean to, I feel like I may be paraphrasing Facebook quotes and whatnot, but you do feel like, well, there's lots of work to be done working within the system, so to speak. Do you think that's futile at this point?
I do. Like, I really
voting
do.
Voting for anything is...
It's terrible to say, and maybe I'd feel differently if I lived in an area where... I mean, I live in Hamilton Center, so the NDP will always win there.
Right.
So it's, you know, it's one thing to live in that environment and to just say, eh, I don't engage with it, because I don't. I don't vote. I vote municipally sometimes.
Right. But just for people who are listening from maybe around the world, when you say you live in Hamilton, the NDP will always win there. Can you expand upon that just for people who may not know what we're talking about?
Yeah. The New Democratic Party is like sort of our labor left kind of party.
Yeah.
I don't see it that way, but that's kind of what it is. And
it's okay. I'm glad you whispered that. No one could hear you say that. That was amazing.
Thank you. And Hamilton's long been a stronghold for that. Like, I don't know how continuously they've held that seat, but certainly well before I got there, and it'll continue happening when I can't afford to live there anymore.
Hamilton, in a very reductive way, is thought to be this blue-collar town.
It is.
And we can talk about Hamilton some more in a bit. I don't want to go too far down that, because I know you have lots to say about the state of Hamilton.
It's true. And we could do a whole other hour about that.
I want to talk about that for sure, but just for the context of what you were saying, so people know, it's been a kind of known as this industrial blue-collar town, and the NDP often represents labor interests. And so that's what you mean by that. It's
totally.
That's why your city is the way where you live is going to be a stronghold for that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But voting still.
I honestly, if people had spent, like, I look to the what is it that they're called, the Socialist Caucus of the NDP, I think I follow some folks that are heavily involved in that, and I think to myself, if they spent, you know, they've existed forever, I think like a couple of decades maybe, if they had been spending that entire time organizing around issues sort of territorially or in neighborhoods or in organizing with their neighbors and with their own community instead of feeding the NDP beast, they would have, from the outside pushing in, been able to change the NDP more than sitting at and having a seat at the table, so to speak. I think that real political change comes from pressure that is outside of the system, and it becomes too much to ignore, and then politics adapts and creates a safety valve and adopts some of these criticisms or addresses some of these criticisms in within the system. But I think sitting inside the system trying to do that, nobody's going to unless that pressure on the outside exists.
But doesn't one's vote apply pressure to that party?
Yeah, in some ways. And in fact, I'm really grappling with my understanding of voting, or my, you know, I've always been one to say...
You've taken very firm stances about
it. I have. And I've been forced to rethink that in the age of Trump or in the age of Ford. You know, maybe there are times when it's worth it voting for the harm reduction kind of option, you know?
I can't abjectly guess how many people there are like you who have these hardline stances and stayed home.
Tons.
But just think of the percentages of people. Like when we vote here in Canada, they'll say how many people voted. It's very rarely anywhere close to 50% of the population in any place has voted. If a good percentage of people, and I know a good percentage of people think exactly like you do, what's the point?
Mm-hmm.
And then they wake up after the election and be like, oh no, what happened, right?
Right.
So I'm not advocating, by the way, for voting or not voting. I just, when you say applying pressure, what you said, I think, is the ultimate pressure on the system has to come from external to the system.
It does.
And but what I'm arguing, I guess, in this particular case is that I think those votes count as that pressure. I mean,
yeah, in some ways, I think you're right. Like you can make the ground more fertile for change depending on who's in power. But I guess, we've got visuals here, so I can show you. You know, this is the entire spectrum of political discourse, with this being the left and this being the right. You know, and all of our political parties are occupying a space about this big, pretty close to the far right of how politics should operate. And I think arguing about what they get us doing is arguing around social issues that are divisive, and nobody's really addressing the underlying. The reason that we have so much anger and so much division right now is because of the inequity and the way different people deal with that. So if you're living in rural Ontario, you might deal with that by deciding that it's because of refugees or immigrants or, mm-hmm. But you wouldn't even be having those thoughts if you had a regular great job and you're able to provide for your family and you were, people were getting along. And so the idea of like kind of organizing around these kind of electoral issues that divide people is, in my experience, we need to spend more time finding what we have in common. And I find that, especially nowadays, the politics is so divisive.
This calls back, I think, I would say, to what I was saying earlier about how we are conditioned to fear.
Yeah,
Racism and prejudice is predicated on fear.
It is.
And I think
100.
And when you're talking about people saying, well, these people are coming to steal my jobs, they're coming to our country, it's just fake. It's just fear that they're implanting within you. So I don't know. I feel like talking about this more and more, and maybe hopefully opening people's eyes to the fact that they have been manipulated by our media and politicians utilizing the media to plant certain ideas in their head. I mean, it's just hard. It's hard. Like, I also think we're busy. We're just all so busy trying to live our lives status quo that it's hard to engage with these things the way we need to.
It's true.
Even though they affect everyone. Anyway.
I would agree.
We should go to another song.
Let's do it.
We should go to another song. What are you going to play next?
This song is called Gotta Get Out.
Gotta Get Out. Okay.
Gotta Get Out.
That's not, you don't want to get out of that room, do you? You just, no. It's not some sort of meta thing you're saying.
No, it's kind of a song about how we're trapped in this situation. And
well, that's what I'm saying. Do you feel trapped in our situation?
No,
right
not
now?
At all. Okay. No, this is lovely.
Okay,
I could spend the rest of the day in here.
It's okay.
It's really nice. I don't know what's going on behind me, but.
Okay, this is also from Before and Aftermath. This is
that's right.
Gotta Get Out by Lee Reed on CFRU.
Hey, we're born in a chokehold. Born in a chokehold, the debt by the boatload, the mirror, smoke, steer folk, fears and hopes, the first past the post, lesser evil host than the demon, feed off of your poles and off of your boats, and then hopelessness grips folks by the throat, choke them, hopes the emotion most used in the process of social control, lever getting pulled like wool over your eyes or the light bulb in your soul, they like life to be dull for the pros, working whole of this kitchen, ditches, pits, and malls, and hold it. Who chose this path unfolding? Who built this mold that our goo's supposed to conform to? Born to closed system of passive victims of math of capitalists, business strategists, updating statuses, data gathering, algorithmic pandering. Do the dance, man. Hey, we rent a burning house now. I gotta get out. I don't know how. Stopped it, blocked. Get boxed in or surrounded now. I gotta get out. I gotta get out. No door, no portal, no exit route. Hey yo, I gotta get out. I don't know how. You got disavowed and cast out the crowd, cause your access card says you're not allowed. Hey yo.
So I wrote the hell out. So I wrote the hell out. So I wrote the hell out. raised in amazement, sorry, trapped in a maze. Rat cage babies born easily swayed by the craze. Ad space sales is craving catastrophe. They made art, sorry, cash out of our collapse. And then the blast and then all out attack, unabashed, ransacking of the last of our earth's capacity, tapping the last stores of our will to ignore the steep hill before us or the thickness of its forests or the distance to shore. It's just not assuring. Sure, I'm alarmist, but it's noon and the snooze is disarmed and charmed by the screen. Tweets, thumbs, and the memes like a IV drip that's feeding an addiction. That screen fiend victims keep eating the dictum, the whip crack system, squeezing all they riches. The old reminisce, the young question existence with minimum wage rates, birth to they grave. Hey, we rent a burning house now. I gotta get out, I don't know how. Stop, get blocked, get boxed in, all surrounded now. I gotta get out, I gotta get out. No door, no portal, no exit route. Hey yo, I gotta get out, I don't know how. You got disavowed and cast out the crowd, cause your access card says you're not allowed. Hey yo.
Can't get out. Wow. that was amazing. That was I gotta get out, right?
Yeah. I had to cut that off. That on the record, that's it's one of the tracks that I have a guest on, my homie Kay the Aquanaut from Saskatoon.
Yes.
I was on that track, so his verse is 20 bars, so I had to sort of situate myself differently on this beat.
Yes, I'm just looking at your Bandcamp page, which everyone should go to leereedsfr.bandcamp.com to check out Before and Aftermath. But it does say that the song is 5 minutes and 25 seconds, which is a bit longer.
I surprised you.
Almost double most of your
songs. Yeah, well, there's a big set of cuts at the end. I should mention that, too. All the cuts that you're hearing are by my buddy Crime One, one of the DJs that I work with. He did all the cuts on the record.
It's great.
Thanks. His cuts are killer.
And you're on Strange Famous Records.
I know,
now.
Man. Woo!
This is Sage. I associate Strange Famous with Sage Francis, among other artists. How did that happen?
You know, funny you should ask. Here in Guelph. I met him in Guelph. I got booked to open for him. At District.
Oh, yeah.
Nick, I believe his name was in touch with me and said, hey, I've got Sage Francis coming here, and I think you'd be a perfect opener.
When was this?
This was 2016.
I missed a Sage Francis show in Guelph. That is ridiculous. I didn't know that. I love Sage Francis. Wow.
I know. He's killer.
I had no idea.
It was amazing. So, yeah, I mean, Nick's like, what would you charge? I was like, Nick, gas money. I'll open for Sage Francis for gas money. Sign me up. So we went there in full force. Like I did one of those sets where I bring two DJs, and I just like I went there to impress the man.
Yes,
let's
of course,
be real,
sure,
you know.
Yeah.
And he mans his merch table like a real soldier. And so I met him briefly at the beginning of the night and chatted with him. You know, told him I was excited to be on a bill with him, and then we started doing our set, and he just like got up from his table and just walked over and came to the front of the stage and just stood there and rocked out.
That's amazing.
It was honestly, it amped me up. I probably had one of the better performances I'd had that year. You know what I mean? Just because I'm like trying so hard to impress the dude. Right.
He's a great guy too. I remember interviewing him for CFRU for the old show I had on here, and a couple times he was on the show, and he's just amazing, like amazingly thoughtful guy.
Totally.
And it makes sense that you're on this label, I have to say.
Oh, it's wonderful. Yeah. It's wonderful. So he was chatting about it then.
Yeah.
He took copies of my last record, the Butcher, the Banker, the Bitumen Tanker, and was in touch about trying to carry that on Strange Famous.
Oh,
and I was
nice.
Like, this to me was like the most Canadian thing I'd ever put out. And I thought, you know, geez, Sage, would you mind if I like give you a listen to my next record? Because I kind of wanted it to, you know, purposefully be a little more universal something.
Yeah.
And he was down with that. So knowing that that was kind of going to get that scrutiny and that possibility, I put a lot of work into this record.
No, it sounds like it.
Thank you.
It's really incredible. And it's really, really great. This song, Gotta Get Out, you mentioned a couple of social media things there.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually wonder, maybe again, in keeping with our earlier conversation about how we sometimes trap ourselves in things, How are you dealing with social media? I know people are deleting accounts and they're trying to get away from it. I'm trying to get off of it myself, I feel like, although I use it a lot still.
Yeah, that's like, my situation.
Confusing. Like, I use it a lot, but I also, like, feel badly about it. Like, it makes me feel bad a lot. What do you, is that going on in this song a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Yeah, it is. And you know, it's such a weird thing, eh? And I think from, like, the kind of work that we do, it's one of the only real available channels of promotion. So it's really hard to turn that.
Well, and communication. I feel like people, we've, particularly when you go all in, like people know about, you know about what's going on in people's lives. They know what's going on in your life.
Mm-hmm.
It's created this weird digital shorthand where you don't even have to talk to it. You walk in and you say, I heard about your cat.
Thing,
I'm sorry. You know, totally. You don't even have to say, how are you? Which is, I think, not good.
Yeah, I would agree. I think if you follow me on social media, you might have noticed. I mean, first of all, I don't use my real name. No one's got at me about that yet. I think if they did, that'd be it for me.
Yeah, I guess Facebook cracks down on that for sure.
Yeah, and I've got haters out there who would probably try and make that happen to me. But the truth is, I don't really put much personal information on there.
Yeah, I got to do that.
I think that a lot of what I share is stuff that's going on in my life. It's either music or activism.
Yeah.
And I'm either, you know, I'm trying to use my list, my network to amplify, you know, the work of people struggling, or music. And I try to share the music of people I think are making good stuff. And I try to share the organizing and activist work of people doing good stuff. But you could go right back to my day one and like, there's no pictures of me and my mom. There's no, nobody knows what my pets' names are. No, you know, I've been pretty careful about that from the jump. That said, it is still a piece of my life, and it is a big piece of my life that I'm sharing with people. Yeah. And it is a really weird thing. And I think it's very, you know, like, I don't really know how to word it, but it's suffocating, even though it's liberating. You know what I mean?
Like, absolutely.
It's
like,
it is a really weird thing. And I think it's added a dimension to, like, this divisiveness that we were talking about before. It's certainly fueled that, you know. And I used to be terrible, Vish. I was like one of those arguholics. Like, you go back like 3 or 4 years, I could seriously spend like 12 hours arguing with people online.
Message boards and whatnot.
Seriously, had that was just terrible for me. And I've done really good at not being that guy anymore. But once in a while, just somebody will say something stupid somewhere, and I'll just be like, you're an idiot, and here's why. You know what I mean? I'll spend like 6 hours of my day like checking back on it to be like, no, you're still an idiot, right? And that's not good for you, you know? Even if you're totally right, even if everything about what you're saying is correct and you're totally on point and you're the smartest professor of smarty pants, it's like, it's still garbage. You know what I mean? Like, it's a dumb way to engage with people on issues that are divisive, you know?
Yeah. My father-in-law one day asked us this in the summertime. He's like, why do you post pictures and videos of your family on Facebook? Like, why do you do that? And it was just an honest question. His wife, like, you know, my mother-in-law's on there. All his kids are on there. And I kind of said, well, I think it's a little volley of hope. I think everyone doing it is vaguely depressed, and it makes everyone feel a little bit better that you can relate to someone or that their kid is doing a thing, and it's just a way of suppressing that feeling. And often people use it now as a cry for help, and I know in some cases it's actually helped them, you know, and so it is a very complicated space, and I'm negotiating it myself. And we could talk about it for a long time. But speaking of complicated places and spaces, I do want to give you an opportunity to talk about your hometown of Hamilton.
Yeah.
Because I know that in the last 10, 15 years, Hamilton has been the subject of magazine covers in Toronto. Saying everybody should just go to Hamilton's the new Toronto.
It's for real.
And
go real.
Move there. And then every once in a while, some of my music friends on Facebook or Twitter will say, did it. Move to Hamilton.
Right.
Because it's cheaper and whatever.
Yeah.
I don't get the impression this is necessarily a good thing from your perspective.
Yeah, it's not. And it's a really complicated discussion because, you know, you look back 15 years, and I was one of those guys like, move to Hamilton, it's the best, you know? And I was out there being like the best ambassador to the city, and like, our music scene's the best, our housing situation's the best, and, you know, screw Toronto, we're way better, kind of thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the speed with which it went from being an affordable, cool place to live to like an overpriced hellhole. It's just happened so quick, yeah. You know, like especially it's exponential, the pace of it. So it's like, I don't know, you go back, I think it was about 2012, it started to get really ugly when people started to realize like, oh, wait, where is this headed? In the last couple years, we've lost two of the sort of smaller or medium-sized venues that would book music 5 to 7 nights a week. The sort of spaces that were booking up-and-coming artists that might only bring out 20 or 30 people.
Right.
They had a business model that could survive that, and they could, you know, they could put on these shows and help these people get to 50, 100.
Yeah.
They're done now. They're like a microbrew pub and a, I don't even know what the other one is.
I'm going to guess
boutique tequila or something.
I was going to guess hair salon.
Maybe.
There's always
maybe.
A hair salon or a coffee shop or a brewery of some kind. Yep.
Yeah. So like, you know, we lost those. My favorite venue in Canada, the St. Hollywood, is for sale now.
I brought this up on the show before, and I feel badly too because for you. I'm sorry for you because I thought I loved that venue.
Me too.
And I don't know who, if it was always the same sound person, but the person I worked with on one occasion and the shows I saw there always sounded better than any other place.
Doug Smith.
Is that his?
That's his
unbelievable.
Name.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
And I brought this up recently because, correct me if I'm wrong, and probably the news has been updated, but my understanding was about 10 years ago, the owners paid around $250,000-$300,000 for that space, and they're now selling it for $2.1 million?
I think it might have been more than $200,000 to $300,000,
oh, okay.
But honestly, whatever it was very reasonable.
Okay.
Doug Smith, he doesn't work there anymore. It's been about a year, maybe even two. He's taken a day job at Long & McQuaid,
okay.
Which is much better for Doug. So it's nice to stop by there to pick up some gear or some rentals, and Doug's
right.
there, get a big hug and stuff. But Doug Smith probably has done my sound, no joke, about 120 to 150 times, because he used to be the sound guy at Pepper Jack's, which shut down around the time that this St. Hollywood was born. They bought a lot of the sound, bought a lot of the sound gear from there.
Were you at the Cool Keith show at Pepper Jack's?
I was.
I was there too.
Were you? When Cool Keith came out and berated everybody for not buying enough merch and
Well,
stuff?
It was two things. I don't want to... There was two things. He was rapping along to his own tracks.
Yeah.
So
before anyone else did.
Yeah, like he had a DJ, but his record was just playing and he was kind of doubling up the vocal.
Yeah.
And then at the end, I had bought the deluxe whatever CD... reissue of Sex Style, and he just walked into the crowd and was randomly signing them,
right?
Which I thought was odd too. Anyway, but sorry, I just like Cool Keith and I like mentioning him whenever I can. But sorry, so Pepper Jack's Cafe stuff got moved over to
And with it, Doug, one of the guy that ran Pepper Jack's booked a lot of his shows out of there, Ken and Yue, member of Strange Waves.
Yeah, I know Ken,
probably like the premier cool guy promoter in Hamilton and a good friend of mine. So a lot of like good people went over there. The owners of the St. Hollywood. Great people, you know, like real Hamilton, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm happy for them because they're older than me. They all work still. They're not making any money running the St. Hollywood, you know, they're busting their backs. And so I get it. You know what I mean? I think Hamilton is an easy to see example of what's going wrong with a lot of cities. And that is, it's capitalism because, you know, there was a time when the rents in Hamilton, literally, it wasn't that long ago that they were half as much as they are now. You look back maybe 5 to 8 years, the average rent was affordable. People could have like a minimum wage job or piece together 2 minimum wage jobs and they could easily make the rent, easily eat, easily pay their bills.
Yeah.
And they had some money left over. And now they don't. And I think that's what's driving, like, we have all these like initiatives about Music City and all this, and if shows were just starting earlier, or if you know, the door was half the price, or no, look back 10 years, there was, you know, dozens of people that would go out and see 2, 3, 4 nights of live music every week because they could afford to,
right?
And now kids can't afford it, let alone the artists who can't afford studio space or who can't afford a jam space or can't afford to live downtown. It's that kind of like the It's like a fish tank, you know. The pH is wrong now. Like nobody can afford to live down there. So the city it's turned into like we've replaced music with food tourism, to be honest.
Yeah.
We have a lot of these like foodie or whatever they call them places, you know. It's depressing to see. And you know, I've been doing tenant organizing this past year, helping with the rent strike in the East End of Hamilton. I'm a member of the Hamilton Tenant Solidarity Network. And and been doing some work around that, and it comes into way more focus when, you know, I'm looking at this as a downtowner that makes music, but when you start to look at the families that are affected by this, the seniors, the people on fixed incomes, the people on ODSP or OW, you know, when they get pushed out of their current home, they got nowhere to go. There's nothing comparable. Yeah. You're looking to like Chatham or Sarnia to find housing, you know, like, it's really terrifying, and people are facing homelessness, straight up. 80-year-old women who've got nowhere to go, you know?
Yeah.
And that's it's very real in Hamilton, because I think that step from affordable to completely unaffordable has happened so quickly. You know, it's you can see it all around, you know?
Well, I appreciate you speaking out on this, and I wish we had more time to talk, but we're actually near the top of the hour, and we need to wrap up our show.
All right.
So I want to ask you, first of all, Lee, where can people go to learn more about you and to hear music of yours? Can you direct? I mentioned your Bandcamp. But
yeah, yeah. The easiest way would be to go to my website. It's LeeReedRevolt.com. There's a listing on there of all my records linked. Because the new album came out on Strange Famous, it's not directly linked to my Bandcamp. Mm. Because the EP I did about Hamilton this summer, it's called the Steel City EP, we had to set up another Bandcamp to direct all the PayPal somewhere else. So I have kind of three different Bandcamp pages going. But if you're to go to LeeReedRevolt.com, you can find all of my social media links and all the various Bandcamps and things going on.
Okay. Yeah. Well, Lee, like I say, I'm sorry we ran out of time.
No worries.
But if there was a song that we could go out on, maybe from your record, what would you select?
Play the last song, Sad Trumpet. It's
okay.
It swears free, and it's encapsulates, I think, the mood of the record well.
Okay. Lee, thank you so much for coming to Guelph and being with me today, and for doing this. It means the world, and I wish you the best of luck with everything going forward.
Thanks, buddy. Thanks for having me.
Now there's an awful lot of problem with the system of economy. Acknowledge it. System hit the roof with the technology. Ecology left a mess of kids. I mean a great, 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 great grandkids is gonna have to deal with. Feel this. Present day people catch a wreck from it. Depressed from it. System got them living under stress. The rest from it. Press for the rent again. Dad got the pen again and counting every cent again. And gotta do the food versus medicine. Trying to find a way to bend. Dollar to a favor when more I'm working two job, doing hard labor, man. Boss has got a house across the harbor. It's marvelous, backyard garden. It's the logic of the market that keeps us at the bottom. And the squalor, the poverty, economic model that run by psychotics, a product of the one percenters, taking the biggest of the percentages. Inexpensive, the bills, food, and the rent is making folks apprehensive. Let alone a dental plan, Lisa need braces. Family gotta scrape the face, cost of the basics, ballot box offering two choices, stasis, a change of face or a new code of pain over the same old arrangement, selling this change while they keep it all the same again, maintaining the reign of this whole arrangement, stasis, no matter model or the make of it, we pay for it, cause that's a future on the pavement, kid, face it, the situation looking bad, sometimes I think about it, it makes me so sad, sometimes I read the stats, it makes me so sad. A big knot in my stomach, I got nothing. Bump this sad trumpet.
Special thanks once again to Lee Reed for coming by CFRU, and also to the staff at CFRU for enabling us to have that conversation live over the radio, including performances. Lee Reed, that was the 456th episode of Creative Control, which is part of the Entertainment One podcast network and is available on all iOS and Android platforms, and also on other things like Spotify and Audio Boom and YouTube and all sorts of other things that I don't even know about. can't find an episode that you've been hearing about, and you look on one of those things and it's not there for some reason, or if you want to find out more about me and sign up for my regularly scheduled newsletter, all of that stuff is on my website. Please visit vishkana.com for more info. If you like Creative Control on Facebook, follow us on Twitter at vishcreative, or follow me directly at vishkana. You can listen to a radio show version of Creative Control on Wednesdays at noon Eastern Standard Time around the world at CFRU.ca or on an actual radio at 93.3 FM if you're in or near Guelph. Also, please visit patreon.com/creativecontrol to make a flexible monthly donation to keep this podcast going. Your pledges mean the world, and they really honestly keep the podcast going, because how else is this podcast going to make any... It's only because of you. Thank you very much. Patreon.com/creativecontrol. Thanks again to Pizza Trocadero, The Bookshelf, Planet Bean Coffee, and Granddad's Donuts for their in-kind support of the show. Thanks again always to my friend, Jim Guthrie. Jim lets me use one of his songs to end the show each week. You can learn more about Jim at jimguthrie.org. And finally, last but not least, thank you for listening to this episode and other episodes of the show, and subscribing to the podcast and suggesting to your friends that they should listen to it. I see many threads on social media where people say, hey, I'm going on a trip. Can somebody recommend a podcast to me? And sometimes, just because I'm a raging egomaniac and I'm very insecure, I scroll through. This show's never mentioned. Never once. And, well, I shouldn't say never once. Every once in a while it comes up, but... that helps. If someone says, hey, I need a podcast to listen to, and you think this might suit them, tell them about Creative Control. Is that too thirsty? I just think that's how the show gets around, is from stuff like that, from people saying, I need to listen to a podcast, and I don't know what to listen to. Tell me what to listen to. That's my core audience right there, my prime audience. That's the audience I want, the ones who don't even know what they want. They might want this. Anyway, I digress. Thank you. Whatever you do to help the show move along and keep going, that's great. I gotta go. I will talk to you very soon. Bye for now.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at hellofresh.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.